This is Counting Flowers on the Wall, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Here Jess Roar and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Chrissy Cunningham, Eddie Munson, with additional tags for canonical character death, in a way, alternate universe, ghost AU, canon typical violence, dead Eddie Munson. But not quite. Chrissy can see ghosts. Well, isn't that just peachy for the dead metalhead nobody seems to see? Laura Cunningham's A-plus parenting. Emotional hurt comfort. Time period, 2003. Something she likes to talk about. Chrissy has enough problems in her life without adding in the unfinished business of every lost soul that crosses her path. She's gotten very, very good at not making eye contact. Which is where the trouble starts. Mrs. O'Donnell's class is boring as hell. And the margins of her notebook are steadily filling up with hearts and stars and eyes. But if she were to get called on, she does at least know vaguely what they're talking about. She can't help the way her attention span drifts. It's warm in the classroom, and the bright April day outside is pouring sunlight temptingly through the windows. How is she supposed to focus on her notes when there's a whole afternoon just minutes away? Chrissy's head is so far in the clouds, she doesn't really notice who she is looking at until it's too late. There's an annoyed scoff from somewhere by the wall, and lazily, she tips her head to look. No one else does, and that doesn't register either. There's a boy standing there, leaning up against the corny literature posters. And she takes a moment to wonder why he isn't sitting at his desk, and furthermore, why was Mrs. O'Donnell letting him get away with it? His hair is long and dark and artfully disheveled, his arms crossed over his chest as he continues making faces about whatever it is that O'Donnell had said to piss him off. He's cute, she notes absently, still mostly lost in thought. In a last-decade, grungy rock sort of way. And this is where everything goes sideways. Because at the exact second that Chrissy realizes that this strange new classmate looks like he walked straight out of the Lost Boys, his eyes meet hers. They're so brown they're almost black. And haunting. Chrissy squeaks and snaps her attention to the chalkboard, but it's too late. No, 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 no. He's seen her. He's seen her seeing him. Hey, you, wait a sec. He sounds so desperate that she nearly breaks immediately, but no, no. Chrissy doesn't talk to the dead. Not anymore. She keeps her eyes resolutely ahead and pretends that she's a model student, one who doesn't drift away in the middle of class and get caught out by some ghost of a hot guy who... Hot? Oh, God, who even is she? Fine. Hot. Some ghost of a hot guy who has crouched down directly in front of her desk. Shit. Chrissy looks over the top of his head as he places both his hands on her desk, just above her notebook, and rests his chin on top of them. If he were any sort of material being, the leather of his jacket sleeves would be squeaking against the old particle board, but it's unnervingly soundless. He tips his head to the side and just looks at her with those eyes. Chrissy's gaze flicks down without her permission. It's all he needs for a smile to break out across his face. It's a nice smile. Her heart pounds against the cage of her ribs. You can see me. And it's not a question. Chrissy squeezes her eyes shut against the sudden pricking feeling at the corners. No way is she going to let this ghost make her cry. Not in class. She is stronger than her panic, damn it. And a single tear spills. Chrissy's chest heaves against her will as she opens her eyes again to find him looking incredibly alarmed. He reaches out for her, fingers inches from her cheek like he wants to brush the evidence of her terror away for her, and stops himself just before he makes contact. The motion of it makes her heart hurt, and she very pointedly does not think about how many times this boy has probably reached out for someone over the years, only to fall right through. Hey. And it's so much softer than she would have expected from him. Don't cry, pretty girl. I didn't mean to make you cry. Chrissy swipes at her traitorous eyes with the cuff of her sweater, and hopes to God that nobody has noticed her back here sniffling to herself. Just got excited to be seen, that's all. It's been a long-ass time, you know? And she nods, just a little. It's enough for him to smile again. And he taps his palm happily against her desk. I know you can't talk now. And he gestures with a flick of his head behind him at Mrs. O'Donnell, who has mercifully continued droning. But later? At that tetanus nightmare of a picnic table in the woods? Chrissy digs her teeth into her bottom lip. She shouldn't. She knows better than this. The dead aren't ruled by the same rules as the living. They're shadows of themselves, driven by a single goal, and that drive could tear her apart if she lets her soft heart win again. But he just looks so happy. Miss Cunningham. They both startle, and Chrissy snaps her attention back to the board, where Mrs. O'Donnell is pursing her mouth irritably. Chrissy swallows as the boy moves, trying to get out of her line of sight, scrambling to his feet and practically hiding behind her chair. She's very aware of the hand he's got on the backrest, inches from her spine. There's an odd weight to it that shouldn't be there for a ghost. Like he could move the desk if he wanted. Like he could be alive. Mrs. O'Donnell looks absolutely thrilled to have caught her not paying attention, a shark smelling blood in the water. And Chrissy can feel her already dying GPA hemorrhaging out. Since you clearly know the material so well, perhaps you could remind us exactly who has killed Donald Bane. Chrissy freezes. No one, the boy hisses. And he's close, far too fast, mouth near her ear like he's forgotten that nobody else can hear him. He fled to Ireland after Duncan's murder. She's been using the stupid fucking trick question for so fucking long, Christ. Why can't she pick on someone her own size? Chrissy repeats the answer with barely a stammer, and O'Donnell looks like she's swallowed a lemon. And Chrissy absolutely doesn't think about the fact that when he'd leaned forward, she could feel his hair brushing against her neck. Being a curious person is going to be her downfall. This is all she can think as she makes her way into the woods behind the football field after class. Because anyone with an ounce of sense would not be doing that. And they definitely wouldn't be doing it to go meet up with a ghost who looks like he walked off a metal album cover. But Chrissy can't stop thinking about him. Specifically, about the fact there's definitely something off about him. Not personality-wise. He seems pretty nice, actually, as far as spirits go. But that was the thing. Spirits aren't supposed to be solid. They aren't supposed to have weight to them. And while she'd noted that his interaction with her desktop was pretty normal, the fact that she can still feel that strand of his soft hair against her skin is freaking her out. Ghosts aren't tangible. That's like Ghosts 101. So yes, curiosity would be putting it mildly. He's waiting for her already, sitting at that nasty old lawsuit waiting to happen picnic table, one of his legs bouncing with either nerves or excitement. Chrissy doesn't know. But he lurches to his feet when he hears her approach, smiling so widely that it's impossible for her not to smile back at him. "I wasn't sure you'd come," he says, scratching at the back of his neck. "Wouldn't have blamed you if you hadn't." He tilts his head as Chrissy fidgets under his gaze, tugging her sleeves over her hands. "Cunningham, that's your last name, right?" He's not subtle. "Chrissy," she murmurs. "Chrissy," he repeats, and Chrissy can feel herself blush. She likes how her name sounds in his mouth, reverent and soft, like a prayer. "I'm Eddie." "Eddie," she says. "Yeah, he looks like an Eddie, with his torn jeans and his leather jacket." Somehow, he smiles even wider when she says his name, and makes a giddy little gesture, running his hands through his hair and turning to pace like he can't work off his energy. "You have no idea how long it's been since someone said my name," he says, rocking on his toes. "It's charming," Chrissy decides. "You start to miss hearing it." She can believe that. He's been gone for a while, from what she can tell by the way he's dressed. Not as long as some of the ghosts she's met, but long enough that the isolation was probably getting to him. Which is a whole other thing. Because ghosts are never really aware of time passing. There'd been a stern-faced Edwardian woman in her first home who had derisively referred to Chrissy as "that little suffragette." Mrs. Howard had really hated Chrissy's jeans. Eddie sticks his hands in his jacket pockets and makes a helpless little gesture at her, motioning to the table an invitation. Chrissy sits down, the splintering old wood of the bench biting into her legs where her skirt isn't protecting them. Eddie sits across from her, takes his hands back out of his pockets, and props his elbows on the table to rest his chin in his palm. He's doing that thing again, where he looks at her with those deep, dark eyes, like he sees something in her. It's as unnerving as it is flattering. "See dead people often?" Chrissy snorts, startled. "More often than I'd like, yes," she says, and realizes too late it sounds just a little rude. But Eddie doesn't look offended. He laughs. Yeah, I haven't seen too many other lost souls haunting Hawkins, and they kind of just ignore me when I try to talk to them. You get that? And that's odd. Everything about him is so odd. She's never heard of ghosts ignoring each other before. Usually they're pretty thrilled to get noticed by someone, like Eddie certainly was, even if that other person is just as dead as they are. Chrissy shakes her head, setting her hands on the table in front of her so she'll stop fidgeting. No, I'm usually the one doing the ignoring, she confesses. Eddie raises his eyebrows at her, and Chrissy wishes that he didn't look so pretty in the mid-afternoon sunlight pouring down through the trees, dappling him in purple shadows. It makes him look very striking. God help her. He makes her want to spill her guts. It's not like she has anyone else to talk to. Her mother has called her crazy since she was 6 years old, and her father doesn't believe her either. Her brother doesn't have the gift. And wasn't that just a funny thing to call it? Gifts are meant to be cherished. Chrissy wishes she could wrap hers back up in the paper and give it to the next person she forgot to buy a birthday present for. Her mother made her swear that this move to Hawkins would be the last one until she graduates. No more ghosts. No more talking to thin air. No more crazy Chrissy. But Eddie, something about him has her so intrigued despite herself. She can't quite put her finger on it. There's everything wrong with whatever has happened to his soul, sure, but there's something else, too. And like she said, curiosity was going to be her downfall. Absently, she wonders if he'd try to catch her on that inevitable stumble. And immediately stuffs that humiliating thought down into the deepest part of her heart she can find. Because crushing on a dead guy is so not on her to-do list for the day. So he's cute and charming and surprisingly sweet. So what? He is dead. So Chrissy bites her lip and doesn't elaborate. Eddie doesn't seem to mind. Well, thanks for not ignoring me, he says. And he says it like he means it. Chrissy's heart gives a startled thud against her ribs. I don't think I could have if I tried. I did, she mutters. And Eddie cackles, delighted. And Chrissy can't help that she smiles. The library is more or less deserted on a day like today, and Chrissy is grateful. She wants time alone in the archives to find what she's looking for. Because today, she met a ghost, and today she decided she was going to help him. Her mother was going to kill her if she found out. She drags her fingers along dusty leather-bound spines, and wishes she thought to ask Eddie his last name. Hawkins is a small town, but she has no doubt he's hardly the only Eddie to have dined here before. She doesn't even know where to start. Her sneakers squeak against the linoleum, the stale air of the basement archive starting to get to her as she thinks. She knows he died in the 80s. Mid or late 80s, going by his hair and the metal band patches on his vest. That's still almost 20 years of materials to sort through. Chrissy doesn't even have a last name to work with. A yearbook would be good. She pops back upstairs to ask the librarian to point her in the right direction, and when she stares at the shelf, it occurs to her that Eddie had mentioned something about repeating his senior year. Yeah, O'Donnell's been teaching the same damn shit since I was alive, he'd complained, when Chrissy had worked up the nerve to thank him for giving her the answer in class. She literally hasn't changed that lecture ever. I could probably recite Macbeth by now if I wanted. Why keep coming to class, then? She'd asked. And Eddie had given her a sardonic look. It's not like I'm bound to the school. I haven't been there in months, he'd said. I just think part of me still really wants to graduate. And that had sounded like typical ghost behavior. She decides to just go for it, picking a yearbook from the shelf. She has to start somewhere, and odds are he'd be in a class picture eventually. He's difficult to miss, after all. The green book is heavy in her hands, clearly not opened very regularly by the way the spine cracks as she opens it to scan the class pictures. This one is 1984, which is probably a little too early, but she doesn't want to miss him by looking at one from after he'd already died. She doesn't see him, and flips through the club pages instead. In between the cheer squad and the chess club, there's a picture of a group of boys wearing matching shirts. Hellfire Club, says the caption. There's a boy with dark hair that could be him, but with how grainy the photo is on the glossy paper, it's hard to tell. And there's no list of members the way they had been for the sports teams, which she finds ridiculously unfair. She pulls another yearbook and looks for the Hellfire Club. And there he is, making devil horns at the camera with his tongue out, but it's him, just the way he'd looked this afternoon, smiling at her. Eddie Munson, she says, tapping her nail under his name. At least someone had thought to label the picture this time. Munson, that sounds familiar. And now she really is talking to herself. The library has computers upstairs she can use to look him up. Maybe she can find an obituary or something. Or something is right. Chrissy stares at the flickering screen before her in dawning horror. Munson murders, still without justice. Jesus Christ! She's befriended the local legend serial killer! They say Ted Bundy was handsome and charming, too, Chrissy reasons with herself absently. But the Eddie Munson the article talks about cannot possibly be the same Eddie she talked to in class. Talked to in the woods. Saw in the yearbook, goofing off with his friends. They described him like he's the devil himself. Leader of a satanic cult, known to make ritualistic human sacrifices in the name of the Antichrist. They must mean Hellfire Club, which Chrissy knows had definitely said Dungeons and Dragons next to it. Not anything about worshipping the devil. The journalist claims Eddie had killed two other teenagers in 1986 and gone after a third, leaving her blind and comatose, before disappearing the night the police were looking for him. He had never been seen again. Well, Chrissy swallows. She could tell them why that was easily enough. I didn't mean to make you cry. Something is so very deeply wrong here. She doesn't know how to bring it up tactfully to him, but Dina, you're the local murderer. Probably wasn't it. Chrissy winces at the surprised look on his face. It's gloomier out today than yesterday, and nobody had noticed when she slipped outside during lunch. The dark clouds are fat with rain, just waiting to downpour. Chrissy puts up the hood of her jacket and tucks her hands into the sleeves. From her perch on the tabletop, she has a very good view of the journey his face goes through as he processes what she's just said, and she feels guilty. I mean, I knew that psychopath Jason Carver thought I'd butchered up his friends for some reason, yeah, Eddie says, still looking taken aback, seeing as he told me so right before he beat the fuck out of me with a crowbar. Chrissy gags. Oh, that's horrible. I'm sorry, Eddie. I shouldn't have said it like that. Eddie shrugs. Live and let live. Or, you know, don't. And he laughs at his own stupid joke, like he hasn't made her heart twist with sympathy. You're not. She chokes on it. Swallows. Tries again as he looks at her expectantly. You're not what they say you were.
Mean and scary,
he says, and with his cheeks squished up from where he's got it resting against his palm, gazing up at her with the biggest, roundest, darkest eyes she's ever seen. Chrissy feels like a fool. Yeah, she murmurs.
I was sort of worried you'd be mean and scary, too,
he says. And Chrissy squeaks, looking down at him incredulously.
Me?
She says, and Eddie nods.
You're gorgeous, and if any of those brain-dead fucks in that building back there has an ounce of taste, popular to boot. The exact sort of girl I'd be terrified was talking to me as a joke. Never mind the whole being dead and the only one who can see me anyway thing.
I'm too new to be popular, and too boring, she protests, and Eddie grins up at her.
Bullshit, baby,
he says, and Chrissy's heart lurches. The blush blooms across her face without her consent.
You see the dead who roam the earth, all us little lost souls. I don't think I'd call that boring.
This was a horrible idea. It's a terrible, idiotic, stupid, horrible idea. But she still feels really bad about calling someone who got murdered a murderer. It feels like a sin. Or, at the very least, incredibly rude. Chrissy unlocks her front door and lets Eddie inside ahead of her. He pauses awkwardly in the foyer and looks around. Chrissy can't help but to feel self-conscious. There's something so nerve-wracking about letting someone see your home for the first time. And she isn't particularly fond of their Hawkins house. We've only been here since October, she says. Just to say something, anything, as Eddie peers at the pictures her mother has set just so on the entryway table. He reaches out to tap at a frame, and once again, Chrissy wonders at the fact that he can do that.
You're a cheerleader,
he says, glancing back at her, and Chrissy can feel herself go pink again as she unties her kids.
That picture must have been her new senior portrait, the one in her Tigers uniform.
Yeah, at every school I've gone to, she says, kicking off her shoes before setting them on the rack.
Eddie gestures down at his own sneakers questioningly, and Chrissy waves him off. It's not like her mother can see him tracking dirt around her house.
I like it, actually. The routine of it is nice.
Pretty cool, Cunningham.
Eddie says, and while it definitely feels like he's teasing her, it doesn't feel mean.
Every school, huh? How many is that?
Chrissy shifts uncomfortably, and Eddie backtracks immediately.
Or we don't talk about that. Got it.
She crosses her arms over her chest, caging off her aching heart, and feeling all of about 6 inches tall.
because Eddie had just asked a normal question, and it had made her stomach drop. It's pathetic the way she doesn't want to talk about it. Crazy Chrissy, talking to ghosts again. Mouth dry, she looks at her bottom lip and avoids his gaze. Whenever I got caught talking to a spirit, my mom would pack us up and move us again, she says quietly. And Eddie's face falls so fast, she nearly regrets admitting it. He goes to reach out for her and stops himself, curling his outstretched fingers back into his palm. It doesn't help the pang in her chest. She'd find out that people were spreading rumors about me, and Mom doesn't like us to stand out. Sometimes I didn't even know I was talking to thin air until it was too late, and they'd already seen. Like what had nearly happened with him. Chris. And he looks so apologetic, Chrissy could scream. It's fine, she says, rubbing her arm. You didn't know. Eddie's brows furrow as he looks at her, and he's quiet for a very long moment. I'm sorry, he says finally. And she murmurs, so am I. Chrissy thinks about how ridiculous her life is, talking to a boy beaten to death and never found 17 years ago. Talking to him in the entryway of her too-clean, too-neat house that her mother has decorated with bland flawlessness. She wants to tear down the perfect wallpaper with her fucking teeth. Because what does it matter that her mother has spent hours agonizing over patterns and colors when all of it is going to mean jack shit the second Laura Cunningham finds out Chrissy's been talking to ghosts again? And the thing is, Chrissy doesn't care. She doesn't care that her mother threatens her with institutionalization. She doesn't care that she packs them up the second she gets a whiff of anything strange attached to her daughter's name. Chrissy just wants to help. And if being kind-hearted makes her crazy, then fuck it, she'll do it anyway. She'll do it for this boy in front of her, who grins easily at her and talks to her like he cares, which is more than she can say for her mom. Chrissy has been made well aware of the kind of trouble she has always been for her mother. Eddie follows her through the living room on her way to the kitchen, because, damn it, she really needs a soapy right now. But she loses him somewhere at the movie cabinet. When she comes back, he's holding a pair of tapes she recognizes as part of her brother's collection, and he's holding them with something like awe. He shouldn't be able to be holding them at all, but at this point, Chrissy doesn't think she should point that out. Like how Wile E. Coyote doesn't fall off the cliff until he looks down. Oh, those are Kyle's, she says. And Eddie looks at her with wide eyes. He shakes the tapes at her. Lord of the Rings has movies? He asks. And oh, right. He's a nerd. The whole D&D satanic panic thing. Chrissy twists open the cap of her drink and shrugs. Yeah, I think the next one comes out later this year. Kyle's pretty bummed about it. They're good. She takes a sip as Eddie stares at her. She swallows, suddenly self-conscious. What?
You liked them?
Hmm? She says, around another sip of her soapy. The story is good, and I like Sam. Don't tell me how the last one ends, though, okay? I know there's books, but I'm not a very good reader. Eddie crosses his heart solemnly and goes back to staring at the cardboard covers. He taps at Orlando Bloom's face with his thumb. Is that Legolas? He asks, and he sounds vaguely disgusted. He's supposed to be of the Sindar. What is this blonde shit? And she doesn't know why she says it, or where the sudden burst of boldness comes from. But Chrissy mutters into the bottle of her sobe. I don't know, everyone's crazy for blondes. I prefer dark hair, though. Eddie keeps staring at her. Chrissy blinks. Like Aragorn, she finishes quickly, and strides past him like her face isn't on fire. Put those back. We can watch them another time. Eddie follows her slowly up the stairs, and she has to glance over her shoulder to make sure he's even following her at all. Promise? He asks. And Chrissy has a feeling he isn't just asking about the movies. Cross my heart and hope to die, she says. Don't, he grumbles. Shit fucking sucks. What do you mean you don't know? Eddie shrugs, and Chrissy launches the first thing she can grab at him. It happens to be her stuffed bunny. Animal abuse, he accuses, after he catches it easily, tucking her bunny under his chin. And he looks so ridiculous, sitting at her desk chair with her stuffed toy clutched to his chest, making sad puppy dog eyes at her. How could you treat either of us this way, Cunningham? Chrissy throws a pillow and manages to hit him dead in the face. You don't know your unfinished business? She says, as he lets the pillow fall to the floor, his expression unimpressed. Not like I ever had a reason to give it much thought, you know? Nobody's asked. Chrissy buries her face in her hands. How am I supposed to help you move on if you don't know your unfinished business, Eddie? You had almost 20 years to think about it. Eddie doesn't answer her, and she looks up, alarmed at his sudden silence. He's staring down at the bunny in his hands, and the contrast of his rings against the soft fur strikes something in her chest. His eyes are hidden from her behind the curtain of his hair. You want me to leave, he says, so quietly she almost misses it. Chrissy's heart drops. No, no, Eddie! She'd thought it had gone without saying that she was going to help him complete whatever was tying him to this earth, whatever was weighing down his soul and keeping him here past his exit. That's what every other ghost had wanted from her, after all. But Eddie isn't like other ghosts. Somehow, she keeps forgetting that. And as Chrissy scrambles off her bed, her legs getting tangled in her unmade comforter and dropping her heavily to the floor, she forgets that he is a ghost at all. Right up until her hands are on his jaw, coaxing him into looking up at her. Not if you don't want to, she says. And he inhales sharply through his nose in surprise, his eyes wide. The bunny falls to the floor. His shaking hand comes up to cover hers, and Chrissy squeaks as what she's done finally manages to catch up with her brain. She's touching him. She's touching him. And he's warm and solid and electric under her hands, her skin buzzing at every point of contact. Chris, Eddie says, his cold rings against her fingers, calluses catching on her skin. What are you? And the way he says it is so full of awe, she doesn't even have it in her to be offended. Chrissy takes a shaking breath and tries to smile. Grammy called it the gift, she says. I got it from her. I've never been able to do this. She strokes his cheekbone with the pat of her thumb, and Eddie leans into her touch like he can't help it. Before. Hope not. I'd get jealous, he says. And even though he's joking, she can hear the tremble in his voice. This is the weirdest Friday afternoon of her life. Chrissy plays with Eddie's fingers, just because she can. She doesn't know why, but she can, and she's going to. They're pressed hip to hip on her bed, because after that nifty little discovery, when she'd gone to pull back, to put some distance between them so she didn't make him uncomfortable, Eddie had made this horrible, desperate sort of pleading noise from deep in his chest. And Chrissy would give anything to never hear him sound that broken again. She runs her fingers over his calluses curiously. Guitar? She asks. And Eddie hums in confirmation. Haven't played in years, though, obviously. He reaches up with his free hand and tugs at a chain necklace from under his shirt. There's a pick dangling from it. My uncle gave me this when I first started learning. Chrissy reaches out to hook a finger into the chain, examining the pick as it glitters in the lamplight of her bedroom. Eddie swallows, and she can see the slow bob of his throat. Your uncle? She prompts, letting the necklace drop from her hand to dangle at his throat. Eddie nods, and Chrissy twists at his chunky rings absently, fascinated with the animal heads. Wayne, he took me in after everything went down with my folks. And Chrissy gives him a questioning look. Redneck shit, you know how it goes. Mom is in the graveyard, Pop is in the pen. He looks down at their hands. I looked for her when I woke up like this. I guess Mom didn't leave anything undone, huh? Chrissy's heart shatters, splintering all over her bedroom floor. She squeezes his hand, and he squeezes back, giving her a sardonic smile. And Chrissy frowns in return, because something about what he's just said sticks in her mind. You woke up like this? Eddie gives her a weird look, like she's the abnormality breaking all the ghost rules. Yeah, I remember everything going black, and when I woke up, everything hurt like hell and no one could see me. Love reliving that memory. Thanks, Chris. Eddie. And she really needs him to listen to her for this, so she moves, untangling their fingers and swinging her leg over his thighs to perch up on her knees. Eddie blinks in bewilderment as she studies his face, his hands hovering at her hips like he isn't sure if he's allowed to set them down. She wouldn't mind if he did. Chrissy rests her hands on his shoulders. Ghosts don't wake up as ghosts, and they definitely don't feel pain. They're alive, and then they're ghosts. No in between. She's had far too many spirits describe their deaths to her. They seem to take some sort of gross pleasure in recounting the horrible way they became the way they did. Like a badge of honor, one specifically to make her squirm. Forget asking what I am, she says, letting her fingers drift to his throat to rest against his necklace. What the hell are you? This is an objectively worse idea. But Chrissy doesn't have many others, and with Eddie standing directly behind her, Chrissy knocks on the trailer door. Eddie's necklace is gripped in her sweaty palm. Her heart is pounding out of her ribs as the door swings open. Wayne Munson is a gruff-looking man, and he doesn't resemble Eddie very much at all. He's grizzled. Years of backbreaking work for very little thanks, written into the very core of him. And Chrissy tries desperately not to wilt under his gaze through the screen door.
Yes.
Hi, she says, and immediately regrets how high her voice is. My name is Chrissy. I had a question to ask you. And Wayne's posture stiffens, but it's not enough warning for her to stop herself. About Eddie?
Wayne slams the door shut.
Well, that was fucking rude, Wayne, Eddie complains, appalled. Chrissy sighs. He's probably been asked about you a lot, Eddie, she mutters. I don't blame him. And every single part of her wants to run away. Wants to keep herself from causing this old man any more pain than she already has, because she saw the look in his eyes when she'd said Eddie's name, just in that split second. It's a heart so heavy, she doesn't think she can bear adding more weight to it. So, yes, she absolutely wants to give up right now. Instead, she steels herself, gets a grip on her nerves, and knocks again. Mr. Munson, she calls through the door, because she wouldn't answer it again either if she were him. I know what you think, but that's not why I'm here. I found Eddie's necklace. The door cracks open, and Chrissy sees her chance. She holds out her hand, and lets the pick dangle from the chain. The faded E.M. Eddie had scrawled on the back of it with magic markers so many years ago, visible. Wayne Munson sighs and unlocks the storm door. How'd you know this was his? Wayne asks, running the chain through his fingers. Chrissy grips her hot cup of coffee with both hands and does not say, because he handed it to me this morning. I saw a picture in an old yearbook, she lies. I was doing a project and realized it looked like that one. I found it in the woods last week. And Wayne takes a deep, pained breath. My boy, he says, and his voice shakes, thick with tears. None of what they say about him is true. You have to know that if you're bringing me this. Eddie, leaning against the kitchen counter and conspicuously pretending he's not listening, looks at her. He doesn't already know what she thinks. Chrissy sips her coffee and chooses her words carefully. I know what the town thinks, she says. But I'm not from Hawkins, Mr. Munson. I'd rather hear the truth. And Wayne snorts, giving her a pained grin. And, oh, that's where Eddie takes after his uncle. She can see it now. It's not a pretty story, honey. Two kids got brutalized so bad they had closed caskets. And nobody seems to know if that poor girl ever woke up. Eddie was... Well, he was Eddie, and people in those days didn't like that about him. Eddie scoffs and grumbles something about asking him if he gave a shit what people thought. Chrissy pretends not to hear him as Wayne continues. Trying to whip themselves into a frenzy, hunting him down. No evidence he'd been anywhere near there, but they had some punk-ass kid from the high school leading them. Talking about God and how Eddie was the spawn of Satan. Garbage like that. Eddie ran. And I don't blame him. And I ain't seen him since. I'm so sorry, Mr. Munson, Chrissy says. And Wayne shakes his head. You know the real kicker? That little fuck, pardon my language, leading the charge, turned out to have been the one what done it.
Eddie inhales sharply from across the room, and Chrissy tamps down on her own gasp.
I always hoped maybe Eddie would come back after they arrested Jason, but he never did.
He runs his thumb over Eddie's necklace in his palm, his eyes glassy.
Guess I know why.
Mr. Munson, Chrissy starts, but her heart is in her throat, her tongue too big for her mouth, and she can't find the words. It doesn't matter anyway, because Wayne doesn't seem like he hears her somewhere far away.
Never seems to matter to folks that Jason Carver has been in prison for nigh on 15 years. They still talk like Eddie did it. Call him the monster in the woods, like he's some kind of boogeyman and not my kid.
Eddie chokes on a sob from behind her, and it takes everything in her not to turn around. He's moved from his spot in the kitchen to lean over the back of her chair, and Chrissy suddenly can't bring herself to move, even as his hair tickles her shoulder.
Don't tell him what happened to me, Eddie breathes next to her ear. Please, Chris.
She bites at the inside of her cheek and nods. Eddie squeezes her shoulder and retreats once more. But he doesn't go far, standing at her back. Chrissy doesn't know if it's for her benefit or for his own. The silence in the Munson trailer is suffocating. She's sitting in a deep well of pain and heartache, one that runs so far down she doesn't know how Wayne can bear it. Drowning in that sorrow, but having to keep his head above water with the tiniest hope that his nephew, his kid, could still be alive out there somewhere, hiding from a town that still hated him. And he's been bearing it for 17 years, all by himself. Wayne reaches out and gestures for her to hold out her hand for him. She does, and to Chrissy's surprise, he drops Eddie's necklace into her palm.
No, sir,
she stammers, but Wayne waves her off.
It ain't mine, and it ain't Eddie's anymore either,
he says.
Seems to me that it belongs to you now.
Chrissy tries to hand it back to him, sitting in her car, the fading twilight slipping in through the windows. But Eddie shakes his head.
You heard the man, he says, and his smile is so, so soft. It's yours now.
The pick clicks delicately against her class of 03 charm at her throat as she closes the clasp. And something about the sound of it is soothing.
It's been the longest Saturday in the world. And Chrissy did promise.
She hauls the little television off her dresser and tugs all of her pillows to the floor before securing her flat sheet to her footboard with hair ties. Eddie watches in bemused silence, leaning against her wall as she anchors the rest of it to her desk chair. The result is a very passable fort, in her opinion. Considering she hasn't made one since she was about 10, she thinks she's done pretty well with it, and she grabs the lamp off her desk as an afterthought, plugging both it and the TV into the extension cord she's borrowed from her dad. She clicks the lamp on, turns off the overhead light, and crawls into the fort, beckoning him into her little fortress of solitude. Eddie joins her willingly, but not without hesitation, the look in his eyes questioning as he crosses his arms over his chest. He'd taken off his jacket earlier for the first time, and Chrissy's eyes keep drifting to his tattoos. She tugs out the tapes from behind her back and shows them to him with a flourish. I said we'd watch them, she says, leaning forward to adjust the television.
You deserve something nice, Eddie. And as she pops the tape into the VCR part of the TV, she hears him murmur, "You're nice enough for me already." Her heart stutters in her chest as she looks back at him, settled in her nest of pillows and blankets. His eyes are dark and kind and fond as he looks at her. And Chrissy knows she's pink from ear to ear. "Just watch the movie, you cornball," she says, but softens it by reaching out to tangle her fingers with his. God help her, Chrissy Cunningham has a massive crush on a ghost. Or whatever he is. Her mother would ground her for life. She's swapping over the tapes when he tells her.
"There's this creepy fucking lab out there where I died," Eddie says.
"People used to say they were experimenting with time and portals to the underworld and shit. Maybe it was true."
Chrissy hums under her breath, considering that.
Maybe? Maybe something out there messed you up. Maybe they never found your body because you got up and walked away with it," she says, reaching for the remote.
"I look like a 36-year-old to you?"
he asks, his voice completely deadpan. Chrissy shrugs.
"I can't explain why no one else can see you, Eddie, or why you haven't aged." Her thumb hovers over the play button. "I just know you're not a ghost, and you feel plenty alive to me." She hadn't meant to fall asleep, and she definitely hadn't meant to fall asleep against Eddie's shoulder.
The blue light of the TV washes him out as she opens her eyes, and realizes that he's just as asleep as she was, the side of his head pressed to her crown. His arm is draped lazily around her hips, and Chrissy has her fingers bunched up in the hem of his shirt.
She can't think of a better way to wake up, even if it is 2 a.m. and she has a crick in her neck. Eddie's probably got it much worse than she does, the way he's slumped over sitting up like that. And she winces as she straightens to tap at his shoulder.
"Eddie? Hey, Eddie, wake up. You're going to hurt so bad if you sleep like that."
His eyes flutter open, and Chrissy's breath tangles in her ribs.
There's no reason in the world for dark brown to be such a striking color.
And the way he looks down at her, like he's so glad to see her there and still with him, it makes her poor heart ache in her chest. Eddie's voice is muddled with sleep as he murmurs,
"Fuck, you're so pretty."
Like he doesn't even know he's saying it. And Chrissy can't help it. She's never wanted to kiss someone so badly in her life. And she doesn't care that he's dead, or kind of alive, maybe, or whatever the hell he is, because what matters is that he's Eddie. He's Eddie Munson, and he's gasping against her mouth. His lips are chapped, but she doesn't mind. It makes him real, makes him feel alive against her as she brings her hands up to cradle his face, to tip him the way she wants so she can be closer, so much closer. Eddie pulls back, and Chrissy can't help it. She whines. He lets out an amused huff and reaches up to tuck a lock of her hair behind her ear.
"Remember how you said everyone's crazy for blondes? Think I know why."
She doesn't even have time to blush before his mouth is pressed to hers. And somewhere in her bones, somewhere deep and ancient, something that's been part of her whole life, something snaps.
"You better get that guy out of here before Mom sees him." Chrissy groans, and her brother's obnoxious cereal crunching greets her from the door. There's something warm and heavy half on top of her, and hair tickling her throat. At least her parents stopped waking her up for church years ago. Her mother always said there was no point in her going. God couldn't save her anyway. Chrissy could take that in stride if it meant she could sleep in on Sundays. The fact that Kyle got to skip out without being condemned to hell did seem a little unfair, though. She waves vaguely at the sound of her brother's breakfast.
Get out of here, Kyle.
Hey, are those my tapes? Were you watching Lord of the Rings? He's far too perky for 8 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and Chrissy cracks open an eye to glare at him. Does your new boyfriend like Lord of the Rings? Will he go with me to Return of the King?
Kyle, get out, Chrissy grits.
And as he sticks his tongue out at her and takes his stupid cabin grunge elsewhere, it occurs to Chrissy exactly what was wrong with that whole situation. Kyle doesn't have the gift.
Did she just dream that conversation?
Eddie, still asleep, seems to sense the change in her demeanor and curls closer, his forehead pressed against the crook of her neck. Chrissy reaches out absently to run her hand across his shoulder and wonders, baffled.
Huh.
She does manage to get Eddie out of the house and into her car before her parents return, and as she drives down Main Street, she notes how normal everything looks. Ever since she moved to Hawkins, there's been a man who has been standing at the corner where he died in the 60s, still waiting for his friend to pick him up for work. Chrissy knows this, because she'd accidentally said hello to him once, and it had taken her 2 days to shake him off, asking her to help him write down the license plate of the truck that hit him. The thing was, he couldn't remember it. And Chrissy had no way to look it up. She just avoided going to the pharmacy for a while after that. But as she looks at his suddenly empty street corner, some part of her feels just a little bit bereft. She pulls the car into a space, slams it into park, and reaches over to grab at Eddie's jacket. Chrissy needs something to hold on to, and he holds her right back, concern on his face as her chest heaves with broken gasps, his big hands wrapped around her wrists. Chris? What's wrong?
The ghosts are gone, she says, and tears eke down her face. They're gone, and you're still here.
I brought you something, Chrissy tells Wayne when he opens the door. Wayne huffs, but he doesn't look displeased to see her.
Young lady, I told you to keep that necklace.
Not that. Eddie tells him he doesn't have any sort of explanation for anything, but Wayne doesn't care. Tells him he doesn't give a single shit if Eddie really did sell his soul to the devil, because he's home. He's home. And as Wayne pulls his kid into a bone-cracking hug, tears dripping down his face into Eddie's hair, Chrissy Cunningham breathes easy for the first time in her life. Winter in Hawkins is a gross, slushy affair. The road crew doesn't put down enough salt. And while Chrissy doesn't have the most treacherous jaunt back from college, it's still nerve-wracking enough that she refuses to drive to the theater. Eddie doesn't mind, and holds her hand the whole trip there, no matter how many grossed-out noises Kyle makes at them from the back seat.
He gets a little pouty that Eddie wants to sit next to her, and Chrissy hands Kyle his soda as he drops down on Eddie's other side. He is my boyfriend, not yours. You guys are gonna make out the whole movie, you sickos. Eddie, with his hair pulled back in his singular concession to modern fashion, laughs. Not a chance, my dude. I've waited a lifetime and a half for this movie. Chrissy digs her elbow into his side, but he's undeterred. We'll just have to see it twice. Once without you, kid. He says, wide grin firmly in place. Kyle makes a show of gagging on his popcorn. Chrissy rolls her eyes at the pair of them and fiddles with the guitar pick at her throat absently. Kyle likes Eddie, and she supposes she should be glad that at least one person in her family approves of him. They don't even know the really upsetting parts. Her mom just hates his hair. Says it's too unkempt. But hey, Chrissy likes that about him. And as the theater lights go down, and Kyle shakes Eddie's arm excitedly, Chrissy can't help the way she smiles. Eddie pops up the armrest between their seats and lifts his arm expectantly. Chrissy can take a hint, and as she tucks up to him and offers him the popcorn bucket, all she can do is sigh contentedly. He ducks down to press a kiss to the top of her head just as the screen lights up, and Kyle groans with annoyance. Eddie shoots him a smarmy grin and makes a shushing gesture at him. Chrissy bites her lip on a laugh as Kyle violently indicates that they need to watch the movie with frustrated hand movements. It's nice, her life these days. There's no more ghosts. There's no more talking to thin air. And while she's never going to forgive her mother for anything she's done, moving out of the house for the dorms has given her some of the space that she needs. Her gift is gone. She misses it sometimes, and that's to her own surprise. Chrissy spent so long wishing she could give away her gift that when she actually managed it, she was left feeling a little bit like a rowboat adrift in the sea without it. How do you go on living when a part of you, even a part you hated, is suddenly gone forever? It had been an adjustment. But she had breathed life back into whatever the hell Eddie had been cursed into by science or magic or God or Satan or fate or whatever you believed. And she's pretty sure that makes her a hero. Eddie tells her she is, anyway. His hero, who took him by the hand and led him home. The thought makes her a little bit misty-eyed. And even as Kyle glares, she tips her head up for a kiss that Eddie happily obliges her. Okay, I really do want to watch this, he whispers. And Chrissy giggles, settling back into his side. She's gonna hold him to his big talk about seeing it twice. The end. Nuts. And y'all have seen I wrote like 30 figs for Julian the Phantoms, right? Juke? Some sort of juke? AU? You want this? No? Here it is anyway. In any case, some kind of mishmash of Julian the Phantoms being human and ghosts. Attic key, man. I just work here. I'm not paid to explain shit. I just really wanted Eddie to get to see Lord of the Rings. He deserves it.
What the fuck?
What the fuck? Why do they have this power over me? Who even am I? Please comment. It's the only indication I have that I'm not being deranged by myself.
Reader's notes. So, there's a line in the middle bit of this here where he goes, "Never mind the whole being dead and the only one who can see me anyway thing." I just saw Beetlejuice for the sixth time last night, and there's the whole being dead thing. It took me six tries to get through that line because I kept falling into the cadence of the song. Not exactly relevant to this, and yet, I needed to share. This wallpaper is recorded as an ITPE 2022 gift for X-Man Hater. Thank you very much to Here Just Roar for having blanket permission to Podfic. X-Man Hater, I hope the whole accidentally brought my ghost friend to life again thing made you happy. Thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.